Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryankara Vavahai Tejasvi Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So then the question is this mixture of rasa bas not relishable under any circumstance? So Srila Rupa Goswami further explains in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, North Wave 8 Division. In some rare cases, crest jewel Mahapurusha devotees, endowed with inconceivable Mahashakti, divine potency, experience the simultaneous confluence of contrary rasas that only serves to enhance their extraordinary rapture in relishing rasa. Rajanath. Right, so it's rare cases. So generally speaking, rasa bas is just something that's avoided. But we can see, 67?
Okay.
Huh? That he says in rare cases, very, very great devotees, right? So it says the crest jewel. Well, the crest jewel Mahapurusha, so you could say the Mahapurushas are the crest jewel, or you could say the crest jewels of the Mahapurusha, whatever it is. But it's rare of very, very special devotees that they might find the rasa bas works. Right? Brajanath, I have heard from the lips of learned Vaishnavas that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu strongly denounced rasa basa to the extent that he refused to hear any composition that was corrupted by rasa bas. So far, I've been told the numerous discrepancies of rasa bas. May I also hear of the different varieties of rasa bas? So, in other words, what is the rasa bas? But now, what kinds are there? Right. Goswami, when a mixture of mellows is incompatible and defective, it is defined as rasa bas. There are three varieties of rasa bas: Uparasabhas, Anurasabhas, and Aparasabhas, which are graded respectfully, Uttama, major, Madhyama, intermediate, and Kanishta, minor. Stai Baba, Vibhava, Anubhava, etc., which are responsive for creating the 12 rasas, Shanta, Dasya, etc., and Hasya, Adbhuta, etc., may assume the status of Aparasa. No, Uparasa. Major. This is caused when the Stai Baba, Vibhava, Anubhava become Virupita, disfigured, by the imposition of a further dissonant rasa. When the secondary rasas beginning with hasya are manifested by a person who at the same time has tatastha bhava, neutral emotion, towards Krishna they are designated as anurasa. If vira, shivalous emotion, is manifested by personalities only distantly associated with Krishna, this may be designated anurasa. Rajana. Okay, so the secondary rasas connected with Krishna, if their position of dealing with their interaction, closeness with Krishna, is neutral, then the manifestation of any of these secondary rasas then is called anurasa, intermediate rasa vas, right? In other words, when the primary rasas, you know, the primary and secondary of someone in a, you know, standard position, then manifest these, means how you say it, the honor, the, what do you call it, rasa vas, then it is considered major, right? So it's very, you know, it's, you know, it'll be more disturbing. Right. Then if the secondary rasas are being manifest by someone who has a neutral emotions towards Krishna, it's not really situated, then that will be the anurasa. Anu. Like that. Medium. Rajanath, Gurudev, how can such an emotion be designated as rasa when it arises in the heart of someone who is distant from Krishna? Truly, at best, such sentiment is gross, mundane rasa. Why then is such sentiment called anurasa? Goswami, rasas that do not have a direct personal connection with Krishna are anurasas. For example, the laughter of the gopis upon seeing the prancing and pranks of the pet monkey of Srimati Radharani, Kakati. Srila Narad Muni expresses adbhuta wonder when he hears the parrots in Bandiravan discussing Vedanta philosophy. Certainly, there's a slight and distant connection with Krishna, but not a direct one. This is anurasa. Okay, so now he's... Okay. Yeah, is that right? Because Narad Muni has to go sit with very elevated persons to hear the discussion of Vedanta philosophy. Right? You know, you have to either find personalities here, or go to your, you know, Tapaloka or something like this, where you're going to find such persons. You can just sit and talk Vedanta. But when he goes to Vrindavan, the parrots are talking Vedanta. Right? You know, so there, it's some fun, right? Down here, it's like very serious. Everyone's very, you know, formal and everything. And up there, it's parrots talk Vedanta. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Rajanath, what is aparasa? Goswami, in a situation where Krishna is the Vishaya, object of hasyarasa, laughter, etc., and his enemies are the ashray, shelter, or enjoyers of this rasa, then such hasyarasa, etc., are called aparasa. The repeated derisive laughter of Jarasandha upon seeing the flight of Krishna is aparasa. Srila Rupa Goswami writes in the Northern Division, 9th Wave, verse 21 of his book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Some persons refer to the entire spectrum of such bhavas as tadabhasa, and others as rasabhasa. However, the expert realized scholars of rasa designate any transcendental bhava evoking divine bliss as rasa. The effect of the analysis of rasa was so overpowering upon Vraja, right? So in other words, it's all rasa because there's some connection to Krishna. But the problem is it doesn't have the proper taste, right? Because it's not Krishna that's tasting it, right? Does that make sense? You know, his enemies, and they're laughing at Krishna. So taste is there. It's connected to Krishna. So it'll give very powerful taste, but it's not being done for Krishna's pleasure. Does this make sense? Right? So therefore, it's then in that lowest stage. The middle, it's laughing about something indirectly connected to Krishna.
Yeah.
Right? So Krishna's not really involved. Then there's the ones where it's the proper rasas and everything like that. But it's just mixed wrongly. Does that make sense? The effect of the analysis of rasa was so overpowering upon Vrajanath and Vijay Kumar that they both fell to the ground. Their eyes brimmed with unrestrained tears. They could simply repeat in gratitude. I humbly worship my spiritual master who has applied the salve of transcendental knowledge upon my eyes and thus extirpated the five severe layers of material ignitions, which are ignorance about the jiva's real spiritual identity, false identification of the body as the self, assuming false proprietorship over matter as her master and enjoyer, attachment to material conceptions and objects and forgetfulness of their actual relationship with Krishna, and thus absorption in material duality. Because the duality comes because you're absorbed in something and not seeing its connection to Krishna. Right? That's duality. If you see its connection with Krishna, then that's not duality. Yes.
I have a question to this we just went through. Are we grading them in what is worse, these aparas and anuras?
I think it's just a matter of how intense it is. They're varieties. Mm. But the in other words, the quality of it, you know, is just, it's not so intense. Mm-hmm. Right? Or you can say is the what was the lowest one? Aparasa. Aparasa is there, is it is maybe very full, but the problem is it's not really being tasted by Krishna.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's directed at Krishna, but it's not for his pleasure. Well, it's like the main rasa. I mean, in the Uttam major, where you're having the Stai Bhava for it like that, then Rupa Goswami gives the example of Krishna is standing there, and this gopi goes, all glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then hugs him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they just don't go together. Does that make sense? So that would be in your Uttam. Mm-hmm. Right? Because that's directly in the pastimes. The other one is not. It's indirectly, you know, interacting with the Lord. The third one is interacting with the Lord, but it's not for the Lord's, meant for the Lord's pleasure. Right? Yeah. It's meant for the other person's pleasure. Does that make sense? And the resultant fear, antagonism, and distorted perception of material bewilderment. Right? So in other words, if these others are done, then that creates fear, antagonism, and distorted perception of material bewilderment. Right? You think the bewilderment, that's reality. And you think reality is bewilderment. Right? Does that make sense? You know, I say here, bewilderment. Religion is the opiate of the people,
yeah.
Right? So that's a bewilderment.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how stupid is that? You know, opium's not cheap. How will the masses be able to get so much?
Yeah.
You know, it's not logical. Does that make sense? No?
Yes.
Huh? Okay, yeah, see, so it can't be true. Yeah. Okay. Five layers of material existence. Ignorance about the jiva's real spiritual identity, false identification with the body of the self. Right? So this is how it works. He doesn't understand his spiritual identity, therefore he falsely identifies with the body as the self, as the soul. Then he assumes, therefore, false proprietorship over matter, because the body and everything connected to the body. Then attachment to material conceptions and objects and forgetfulness of their actual relation with Krishna. Now that attachment to them, what you're gaining from them, but not realizing that what you're gaining is actually connected to Krishna. It's his potency. Right? And therefore, then comes fear, antagonism, distorted perception, material bewilderment. Right? Then timirandasya, the darkness of ignorance, in the form of striving for the four Vedic goals, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, stems from these five layers of nescience. Right? So therefore, if someone's striving after these, That's because of the ignorance. Right? So if we wonder why someone would get distracted by these lower levels of consciousness, then that's going to be because of misidentifying with the body in that. Does that make sense? Otherwise, why would one strive for dharma, artha, kama, and moksha? Right? If it's your duty, you're doing it because you're supposed to. You're not doing it because you want the result. So if you're really interested in the result, then that's a problem, right? So nowadays, this idea of, you have proprietorship, well, false identification with the... That means all these are very important in modern culture, right? It means these are the basis. You have an attachment, that's good enough to... That's enough prima facie to establish that you're prima facie. It's a legal term for, like, when they're going to start a court case. Let's say someone applies for a case against someone. Then the judge actually checks if it's actually a real case. He's breathing all the air in the room, like this. What's the case? like that. His mouth's bigger than mine, so it's like an unfair advantage. It's not a real case. So then it's thrown out of court, right? Does that make sense? Right, that. So in other words, that's enough just to establish, yes, it's their right. They have attachment for it, it's their right. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, and then it's not seen in connection with the Lord. That's, now we can see, is that it gets down to this, from that whole thing, it comes down to not seeing it in connection with the Lord. So you can reverse that by seeing it in connection with the Lord. You see it with connection with the Lord, then your attachment has been connected, right? That means then your proprietorship, it's not yours anymore, now it's Krishna's. That means then the body is not yours, it's Krishna's. And that means I'm not the body, I'm servant to Krishna. Does that make sense? So when we're using this point of trying to see everything that we're attached to in connection with the Lord, then that is actually dealing with the most difficult part of it. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. It's practical.
In the 13th chapter, last year, we were discussing how the addiction to a particular type of mode is what keeps us...
Yes. It just keeps us in material existence, because that taste always changes. It's not that we're always attached to one particular mode, because the modes are always changing, always moving. Because if it was always the same, we'd get bored. Right? So there may be something predominant, but within that. So that's what we say. It's a predominance. If someone's in the mode of ignorance, the predominance is ignorance. Then the balance is goodness and passion, or ignorance. Does that make sense? So if you take predominance as 60%, that means 40%, that's what's changing. So sometimes it's 60% ignorance plus more ignorance. Sometimes it's some passion. Sometimes it's goodness. Sometimes it may be all three. Does that make sense? So that's what gives the variety within the life of someone in the mode of ignorance. Same with passion, same with goodness. Yeah? Okay. Timurandasya, the darkness of ignorance in the form of striving for the four Vedic goals, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, stems from these five layers of nescience. Mercifully, the guru opens the spiritual vision of the jiva and makes him fixed in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that was an extended translation of Om Ajnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakya. Yeah. We see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur does it, Prabhupada does it sometimes. They just give, in other words, it's giving the translation with the purport. Like that. Srila Gopal Guru Goswami bent down, raised the prostrate forms of Rajanath and Vijaya Kumar, and firmly embraced them. He showered unreserved blessings upon his disciples, explaining, "May the beacon of Rasa Tattva light up your hearts." Thereafter, Vijaya Kumar and Vijayanath pay daily visits to the Radhakanta temple and engross themselves in spiritual discussions with Sri Jnanachandra Goswami. drinking the Charanamrita and eating the nectarian prasadam from the lips of Srila Gopal Guru Goswami became an eagerly awaited daily ritual for them. An eagerly awaited daily ritual for them. So is this Vaidhi or Rag? Rag. Someone else?
Yes.
Vaidhi.
According to Vaidhi.
Yeah. Yeah, because in other words, they're eagerly awaiting to do that, so that means eagerly awaiting. There's only a certain time you can see them, so at that time they go, they sit, they do. You understand? The point is because it's a ritual doesn't mean that it's... Every day Mother Jashoda comes and wakes Krishna up in the morning. Right, cause, you know, because she wants to. Does that make sense? But rag means you want to for Krishna, not that you want to for yourself. Of course, in the material platform, that's the problem. We have such rag, you know, for being involved in it. Does that make sense? Good.
They must be on quite a high level because it says eagerly awaited. So that means they're on time.
Yeah, eagerly awaited, just, you know, because they're sadhus, so they run a regulated lifestyle. So externally it looks just normal. On different days, they would visit the various holy spots of Puri, such as the Bhajan Kutir and Samadhi Mandir of Srila Haridas Thakur, the Siddha Bokal Tree, Sri Tota Gopinath Mandir, and so on. At these places, they observed the different techniques of many Vaishnavas in chanting Hari Nam, and their own quality of chanting was enriched by these examples. Furthermore, they were very attracted to visiting the places of Sri Chaitanya's pastimes, as described in the Stavavali and Stavamala, and experienced transcendental bhava in this way. Stavavali? I'm not sure. One of them is Srila Rupa Goswami's, one of them is Vishwanath. No, excuse me. Raghunath Das Goswami. One is Raghunath Das Goswami's prayers, and one is Rupa Goswami's prayers. Because it can't be Vishwanath, because this is too far back. Whenever they saw Shuddha Vaishnavas performing kirtan, they joined in. Vijaya Kumar and Vrajanath were gradually advancing and chanting as Shuddha Bhakti. One day, Vijaya Kumar considered, Srila Goswami has given a very brief account of Madhurya Rasa. Vrajanath is attracted to Sakya Rasa. However, I am definitely inclined to Madhurya Rasa and feel the urge to ask Gurudev for further details of this topic. At a suitable time when we are alone, I shall put further inquiries. At the request of Vijaya Kumar, Sri Jnanachandra Goswami kindly gave a copy of the book Ujjvala Nilamani, which is a great exposition upon Madhurya Rasa. Vijaya Kumar enthusiastically delved into the book, going to Srila Gopal Guru Goswami for clarification whenever doubts arose. Sitting on the beach one evening, watching the endless waves of the ocean, Vijaya Kumar and Vrajanath mused that life was like those waves, a continuum of unknown future events. Who could predict the future? Therefore, the best course of action was to immediately learn the process of Rag Marga Bhajan, the path of cultivating spontaneous attraction in devotional worship, from Srila Gopal Guru Goswami. Vrajanath commented, I have seen the devotional process that Sri Jnanachandra Goswami has propounded in his Bhajan Padati notebook. Vrajanath, okay. I think we should emulate that process. If we could make copies and receive more esoteric instructions upon that process from our beloved Gurudev, then we shall surely get good results. This decision having been made, Vrajanath humbly approached Sri Jnanachandra Goswami to make copies of his handwritten notes on the process of his bhajan. But Jnanachandra said, without permission of Srila Gopal Guru Goswami, I am not in a position to give copies, right? Because he is now the primary one giving siksha. Vrajanath and Vijaya Kumar then approached Srila Gopal Guru Goswami about this, to which he consented, saying they should come to him with the notes for clarification. Upon requesting and receiving copies from Sri Janachandra Goswami, Vijaya and Vrajanath decided to read the notes meticulously and to consult Srila Gopal Guru Goswami about their esoteric aspects at every stage. Sri Janachandra Goswami was a great pundit, well-versed in all scriptures. His speciality, however, was the profound methodology of the Vaishnav science of bhajan, in which he was the foremost of the disciples of Srila Gopal Guru Goswami. Considering them well qualified, Sri Dhyanachandra Goswami tutored Vijaya and Vrajanath in all the esoteric aspects of Rag Marga Bhajan. Whenever doubts arose, Vijaya and Vrajanath humbly approached Srila Gopal Guru Goswami for clarification. Having understood the divine attributes of Sri Chaitanya and having grasped the transcendental essence of the pastimes of Sri Krishna, Vijaya and Vrajanath joyfully entered the path of Astakaliya Bhajan, devotional meditation upon the eternal pastimes of the Supreme Lord throughout the 8 time divisions of the day. So here we're taking the aspect of your Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, right? So it's just Buddhi Yoga. But now the focus is going on to the Lord as a person. But as we see from the candidates, it's very natural. Right? In other words, they like doing bhajan. They like associating with devotees. They like any Vaishnavas who are doing something, they take advantage of their association, try to see how to better perform the bhajan. So, in other words, there's not a technique that changes. So here, when he's talking about techniques, it doesn't mean the external mechanics. It means that one is aware of one's bhajan. Does that make sense? You understand? The bhajan means your performance of devotional service. Going to Mangalarti, chanting your japa, Tulsi Puja, Bhagavatam class, darshan, that's bhajan. Does that make sense? It's not bhajan, so we're doing one thing and bhajan something else. No, that's bhajan. So it just means, bhajan means how your devotional practices. Right? So now, this rag marg means that now spontaneously you are attracted by the service of the Lord, and so you're very much aware of the quality of the service. Right? It's not a matter of facts and figures. You know what I'm saying? It's a matter of, how do you say? Being aware of Krishna and everything, and seeing to the quality of pure devotional service. Does this make sense? That's where the focus is. One will try to put it on externals. Why? Because that's what we look at. Right? We're in the material world because we look at externals rather than the actual connection with Krishna. Does that make sense? That's why we're here. One looks at the spiritual world. Okay, what's the gain out of this? Right? Shankachuda, he's in Vrindavan. Right, he's there. Balaram's having his rasa dance. He could just hide behind the trees and watch in amazement and appreciation. Right, or become attracted. He could do so many things, but instead he checks it out. And goes, wow, look at all the nice looking girls here. You know, does that make sense? And so he's a certain size. He's kind of big. You know, so he's got big arms. So he can only herd so many girls along. Right, you know, hey, I'll take these ones. You know, these ones look good. Does that make sense? So that's what one does in the material world. One sees the situation and then thinks it's the externals that are important. Take that, use that. What am I going to get from this? Okay, so from these external bhajan, what am I going to get? How can I improve what I get out of this? Understand? So that's not the basis of rag bhajan. That's just standard when we take up devotional service, that's what we're going to do. But point is now we've connected it to Krishna. We've taken our attachments connected to Krishna. If that happens, then our sense of possession will soften. Right? That happens, that identification with the body will soften. When that happens, then our ability to understand I'm servant of Krishna comes out. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why technically just being detached or renounced like this, or understanding we're not the body, is not enough. You have to actually come to the point as I'm serving the Krishna. Right? So what are we doing? We're attacking it from both ends. Right? I'm not this, I'm Krishna's servant, I'm not this body, right? Everything belongs to Krishna. Everything should be used in Krishna's service. That just got rid of everything. Right? And being able to identify the difference between spiritual and material. Right? That's what the Bhagavatam says. Truth is being able to tell what's spiritual and what's material. It's not facts. So when someone says tell the truth, that means tell something about Krishna. If it's facts, what is the point of the facts? Yes.
Mara, sometimes due to material conditioning,
yes,
it seems that for a devotee, one aspect of Krishna consciousness is natural, and he is attracted to natural. Yes. Is that called rag, actually?
That aspect is rag, but the problem is until that's the prominent how you basically deal with everything, then you're not said to be practicing rag bhakti.
Everything means all the aspects of...
Means it's just like this. If someone goes into the kitchen once a week and cooks for 5 minutes, do you call him a cook?
No.
But he's cooking.
Yeah.
He's there, he's in the kitchen, you know, he's got the pot, he's got his can of beans, right? He actually opened the top, right? You know, like that, you know? So it's happening, you know? It's going on, you know? It's this... How you say? He's going to make the beans hot, right? So, and it's food, so hot cuisine, right? Isn't it? No? So that's the point, is that what aspect? So, but the point is you can start from there. How are you going to train him to be a cook? You start with that there. You show him how to make better beans. You know? There's variety to the beans. Right? You know, you can fully open the can, open it, just leave it open, you know, open it but leave the top connected, you know, half open it and really shake them out. You know, there's so many varieties that you can leave the label on, take the label off, you know, wash the can first, not wash the can first. Hey, you know, so. Does that make sense? So you start from that, that's your attraction, and then it'll expand from there. That's the beauty of it. Is every, I mean, because everything's coming from Krishna. So all the activities, the senses, anything, the way senses can be done, that superior aspect of those principles, that's coming from Krishna. Right? So that means whatever, the conditioning is always connected with the senses. Right? The particular kind of eye, nose, this, what effect you want to get, what you want to taste. So that means any conditioning can be connected. So what aspect of someone's conditioning finds its more natural attraction in Krishna consciousness, if that's cultivated, it will naturally get purified, and it'll just expand. So someone, like, let's say, likes to sit down and chant. Someone else is too restless, but they like kirtan. You know, someone else likes something practical. Someone else, you know, likes to read. Someone else likes to manage. Right? Because that's actually what Varnashram's doing. It's taking it, that aspect that you like, and connecting it to the process of the mode of goodness. And then you're supposed to take that and connect it to Krishna. So it's the same process. Right? So it's just trying to cultivate what you like to do best. Does that make sense? So it works. It works. But when it becomes the prominence, then you call it rag. Right? But the point is because in there one's very inspired, very enthusiastic, that's noted. You say, oh, they're very enthusiastic when it comes to this. Or very inspired, or very inspiring, or... Right? You know, but when it's like that, basically they're always in that mood. That's when you call it rock. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because then it's prominent. You know? And it's just like, let's say you take the 3-year-old girl, right? She gets her dolls, there's a wedding, there's a whole thing going on, you know? But now, does that mean now she's, you know, a mature woman? No, because that's just some of the things, you know? Does that make sense? So when that becomes prominent, then that's... Yes.
If a person is inspired in one area and not so much in others, and we know they are all parts of devotional service, should the person be artificially trying to be more inspired in other areas as well?
But why is it artificial? Means
no inclination.
Yeah, so no, much. I'm saying, if, let us say, he's inspired in one area, but not inspired in another, Okay. So now the question is should he try to do that part he's not inspired in? And so he would call that artificial. Right? I mean that would be the present social proper usage of the term. But the thing is what is not, is devotional service artificial or not artificial to the soul? So we might say that particular activity is artificial to the conditioning. But the point is the conditioning is artificial. This is the illusion. You know? Mm-hmm. All these brahmacharis, being it's so artificial. Why don't they be real? Since when is being attached to physical sense gratification real? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem. Is that due to the mode of ignorance, our definitions are actually reversed. The situations, how we view them, are reversed to what they should be. But if you're performing devotional service, the whole thing, when it becomes purified, it starts to work. Does that make sense? So the point is the activities recommended? If they're recommended activities, that's what everybody's supposed to do. Now within that, you might have trouble with some recommended activities, you might find others easy. That doesn't matter. You start with that by being enthusiastic in the ones that you like, it will start to make it easier with the ones that you're not so comfortable with. Right? Then it'll just automatically come. Now, what we call artificial means when you're dealing in an occupation that's not your nature. That's where we'll say is artificial. You know, it's like Kali Raj as being a king. That's artificial. Right? Because kings don't beat cows. Right? But they look at it, king means power, and so I have power, I use the power how I want. That's artificial. Right? Because it's not real. It has to be defined by Shastra. So Shastra defines how it should work. So if it's recommended, you know, the program that we have, the activities that we do, then that's standard. Does that make sense? Then, basically, you could say from, you know, getting up, you know, from Mangalartik through to Prashad, that's pretty universal, right? Everybody can basically. Now, what you do between breakfast and the evening program, that will be what will be according specifically to the particular conditioning. Right? Does that make sense? But your standard direct activities of devotional service, that's universal. You know, but it's just activities that engage the particular conditioning one has. Right? That's where then you would want to apply it properly. Now, if someone doesn't know, they're too much in ignorance, you engage them in something, you know, physically active to keep them involved and they get purified. With time, you'll be able to see what they can do. Like previously, anybody joined 6 months, you wash pots. That was just what you did. You know, on Sunday or weekend, you go out on Sankirtan, you know, Harinam and do something like that. But the rest of the day, you wash pots. You went to the morning program, evening program, and then the day wash pots. Because you're engaged in something, it has to be done, right? Because there's a cook over there, he wants the pot, right? So that it kind of, you have the impetus, right? Plus, if you wash the pots, the cook cooks, you get to eat. Now that part you like, right? So that's what I was saying. If you like one part, all the other parts will come, right? So then you do that. Then you get purified. Then you see after that time, then they can start to relate more to everything in Krishna consciousness. That's what Prabhupada talks about, Purushacharya Vidhi. Right? It's just, in other words, the Purushacharya Vidhi for us is actually the performance of devotional service. But Purushacharya Vidhi in the Pancharatrik line in that means specific activities being performed. But the problem with that is it requires the basis of Vedic. Right? In other words, you require that you actually are situated in goodness. You know, or at least close enough that a teacher can do something with it. Right? And so then they go through that mode of goodness lifestyle for a while. Right? Does that make sense? So we kind of take it that someone's there, they a little bit, then they get first, then they go a little more, then second, and then they basically start to live that lifestyle. But in this traditional fashion is, no, you already have to be living the lifestyle of goodness. Then we'll talk about pure goodness. Does that make sense? So devotional, so the only way that we're actually able to be involved in Puruscharya Vidhi is because we're simply doing devotional activities. But so it's preliminary to our actual, you know, understanding or like that complete surrender and like that kind of thing. Does that make sense? So we know it's good, we like the devotees, we're surrender the process. So we engage ourselves. Then we start to actually understand what's going on. Then one's qualified for initiation. Does that make sense? So it's just... So, okay?
More things. It's written there that Janachandra Goswami tutored them.
Yes.
When they had some questions, they went to Gopal Guru Goswami.
Because he's Janachandra Goswami's guru.
So when Janachandra couldn't answer?
It's not so much couldn't answer, it's just that it's they're sitting and discussing with Janachandra. It's like because his guru is Gopal Guru, and they're accepting the Siksha Guru. Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm not sure if Janachandra is a Diksha disciple or a Siksha disciple of Gopal Guru. I think it's Diksha, but I'm not sure. So they're basically, you could say, like God brothers. So when they're sitting with Janachandra, it means they're sitting, discussing, but because he's expert in bhajan, defining bhajan, right? It means it'll be based on what Rupa Goswami gives, but he's expert at delineating that. So therefore, they're discussing with him. Then he has notes, so they want to get a copy of that. But then these notes would be his realizations from hearing from his guru, so then you need his guru's permission. Does that make sense? So if you want to get into serious discussion, it goes back to the guru, because that's where Janachandra got the knowledge. Does that make sense? Oh, we finished it. Okay. Okay, chapter. Okay, now part 6, chapter 31. Okay. Madhurya Rasa, part 1. Okay, so, as mentioned before, in just describing rasa itself, so rasa has the categories, and Madhurya is one of them. Does that make sense? So that was what was discussed before. So we went through what is rasa in the way of describing its five components, right? Like the sthayibhav, the vibhav, anubhav, sattvikabhav, and sancharibhava. Then how those work, the mechanics of that. Then the sthayibhava, because that's the basic place where one will be situated. How that functions. So then the five rasas are discussed. Right? And then, when it goes outside of the proper mix, rasa-bhas. Okay? So that covers, that's what nectar devotion is going through. That's how it defines it. Right? The second part, the first part is about devotional service. That we've dealt with in the previous chapters. Then we dealt with, we started with vibhava and all the different aspects of bhava. Right. Then after that, we went into the rasas, and then after that, part 4 of nectar devotion is rasa bhas. Okay, does that make sense? So that's covered that. So now madhurya rasa just means madhurya rasa itself is being defined. Yes. The letters are bigger, so therefore it's a bigger book, but the letters are bigger. Okay. But I'm happy about the bigger letters, not because it makes it, the book smaller, it means it's easier to read. As the days went by, the dark thunderclouds of the rainy season were being replaced by the white fleecy clouds of autumn. Because, right? So much of the rain has already fallen, right? And, you know, nowadays it doesn't necessarily, but like that. So the clouds will get whiter. When there's less water inside, they're whiter. When there's more water, they're darker. Mm-hmm. One day's afternoon prasad. Okay, one day after noon prasadam, Vijaya went to the Radhakanta Mandir, where he offered his prostrate obeisances to Srila Gopal Guru Goswami. Being very pleased to see him, Srila Goswami embraced him and had him sit down and relate his devotional progress. Burdened with questions about Madhurya Rasa, Vijaya Kumar immediately felt the calming effect of his guru's presence as he began. Gurudev, I am very thankful to you for your unlimited patience and mercy. I beg permission to inquire about certain esoteric aspects of the Ujjwala Nilamani that are beyond my grasp. Srila Gopal Guru Goswami answered, Vijaya, you are my beloved disciple. Feel free to ask any questions you wish and know that I shall always try to answer as best I can. Vijaya continued, Dearest Gurudev, Madhurya Rasa has been praised as the most excellent among the Mukhya Rasas and is capable of evoking the most extraordinary bhava and rasa. It is beyond the grasp of the impersonalists and materialists. What I cannot understand is that such a supramundane divine rasa should ostensibly be exhibited as similar to the shameful and despicable exchanges between men and women of the material world. So why is it the form looks the same? Goswami, son, you know that the variegatedness of the mundane plane is a mere reflection of the variegatedness in the transcendental realm. In fact, this material world simply mirrors the spiritual world. The mystical truth is that the reflected image is reversed and inverted. Therefore, the best and the highest in the original spiritual realm is the worst and the lowest in the reflected image. That is the material world. Reversed means what's the mode of goodness becomes less, the mode of passion, ignorance becomes more. It's inverted, so therefore what's on the top in the spiritual world is on the bottom in the material world. Does that make sense? Yeah. Conversely, the lowest in the spiritual world is the superior most in the material reflection. The Supreme Being by his achintya shakti, right? Because it means if you can say, you know, generally, you know, carefully you can talk about God. But if you want to be more general, you just talk about the Supreme. Right? So that's more widely accepted, but that's the lowest on the spiritual platform. But that becomes the highest on this platform. You understand? Yeah. The Supreme Being, by his achintya shakti, has projected himself as the reflection of his own potency, thus diffusing himself in the material nature. Right? This is the point. Madhu won't go for this one, because he doesn't want that there's anything involved, because then the Mayavadis will say it's illusion, so then the Lord is there. So it becomes a difficulty, but it specifically takes that stand to defeat the Mayavadis. Right? Well, Ramanuja and that will then bring this element out. Right? So he's diffused himself in material nature. It means his energies, because himself and his energies are non-different. Right? But the point is you can still see the masculine and feminine principles. That's always the point. Right? Is that can still be seen. Therefore, mundane nature is endowed with the attributes opposite to those in the absolute realm. In the mundane world, rasa is diametrically inverted version of the rasa in the transcendental world. The sublime rasa reposed in the Supreme Lord, right? So, in other words, one has to be able to discriminate between the two. If one can't discriminate, then this is definitely not what subject matter for oneself. Right? Does that make sense? So, one has to be able to tell the difference. One can't think that, well, what I do here is what's going on there. No, what we're doing here is one thing, what goes on there is another. Mechanics are the same, but the mood is what's different. So you said, we do things here because I like it. Right? Does that make sense? So Like here, it's I like being with the person because he makes me laugh. Right? But there, it's I like to be with that person, with Krishna, because then I can, you know, in making him laugh, then I'm happy. Does that make sense? That's the difference. The sublime rasa reposed in the Supreme Lord is his magnificent variegatedness of ecstasy. When this sublime rasa is reflected upon the mundane plane, the materially conditioned souls impose mundane designations and qualities upon the supreme rasa. So there means, as this is reflected, then we will give our definitions of what this rasa is. Right? And then how it's supposed to be dealt with, what we can gain from it, everything. Does that make sense? So as soon as it's there, then we make up our own ideal. In this state of confusion, they decide that all the manifest variegatedness is mundane and consider that the absolute truth must be opposite in nature and therefore nirvisesh, right? Rather than its reflection, right? Means the natural thing is if you're walking along and you see a tree in the water, then you look to see where the real tree is. Right, but due to this reversed and inverted mentality, then what happens is when it's reflected, then we think, well, that's mundane. So therefore, the other is spiritual means without that, because actually, what he's getting at here is the material world is not mundane. We designate it as mundane. It's Krishna's external energy. It's an inferior energy, yes, but it's still Krishna's energy. It works according to his laws, does everything how he says it should function. Who's the one not cooperating? It's us. It's not the material world. Material world works perfectly according to the law, God's laws. We're the one that doesn't. So we're the one giving it the mundane. We're the one saying the bricks are holding the roof up. Well, actually, no, it's Krishna's potency of strength is holding the roof up. You understand? So that's the point, is there's nothing that's not Krishna. But we designate it that it's mundane. Right? In fact, the Supreme Absolute Being is the embodiment of mellow and beauty. He is therefore the repository of the wonderful variety that's reflected as the perverted rasa of the mundane plane. So whatever variety is here, it's only because that's reflected from the Lord. Right? That's all. And as we mentioned before, since the chit potency of the jiva is what's being reflected onto the mirror of the mind. Right? And that way you perceive the world. So depending upon how dirty it is, you get that good of a reflection. Right? It's clean, you get better, you know, as good as it gets around here. When it's devotional, then you see it actually in line with its original. Does it make sense?
Right.
Yes.
So the problem is not what devotional service actually is, but what we think about devotional service.
Yes, it's what we think about it. Because there's no problem. What is the problem in chanting the holy name and taking Prashad? What could go wrong? We make it go wrong. You know what I'm saying? Prashad is sitting there. We overeat. Or we won't eat that. Oh, the hot, too rich, you know, like that. That's you know. We give Prashad a bad name. Prashad is Krishna. You know what I'm saying? There's the body, there's this, that, it's all Krishna. So therefore you take according to whatever's the nature of it. You know what I'm saying? The halava's fine. You know, we're the ones that, you know, have a bad liver or get fat. You know? Does that make sense? There's nothing wrong with the halava, but we're the one that's great and the halava has a problem. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that we're the ones that make the mundane. There is no such thing as mundane. It exists as a form of consciousness. Mm-hmm. But because we're functioning in that and we're identifying with it, therefore we'll call it like that. You know, we'll say, yeah, the witch Maya and all this and that. But actually the point is that she's just offering stuff that you yourself like. Mm-hmm. You know, problem is he kind of hopes you will stop offering it. But the point is you have to stop wanting it. You know, it's just like the, you know, hormone. Oh, I can't watch. You know, like, you know, it's like, you know, it's
I can't not watch.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you get, you know, those kind of funny green lolly thing, those gobstoppers. You know, they call them. America, we call them jawbreakers. They're like hard candy, mm-hmm. You know, really hard. And depending upon America, they make them smaller. I guess that's why they're jawbreaker, because you try to bite them. But in England, they're called gobstoppers. Gob means your mouth. You know, you're talking and all that kind of stuff. Because they make them bigger, because once you put it in your mouth, you can't talk nothing. So it's probably, you know, just English were a little smarter about it or something, you know. you know, that's like 6 hours, you know. It's like, give that one to the kids, it's like silence, you know. Americans, it's, you know, give them one of those and put it in front of the television. But then it's a waste. You could have just had a bigger one of those, right? A lot cheaper than cable, no? You know, like that, yeah. So in other words, you give that to the kid, and there's these ones, they're like insanely sour. I mean, like, insanely, like, to the point, demoniacally sour. And the little kids love them, you know? It's so sour. You know, gives you goosebumps, you know, teeth hurt, you know? But they love it. So, you know, that's the problem. We say it's that, it's this, but they love it. So the problem is, the problem comes down to it's us. It's how we view the world. You know, so now we're getting into this element of he's explaining it, but on a level, on the Bhagavan level. But this is what Second Canto is talking about when it's talking about this understanding how Brahman is and everything. But they're relating that always back to the person. But it's the potency that's in it, because Krishna, he diffuses himself through. That means it's just part of his potency. You know, and so we're attracted by that. So that attraction, we're attracted, but that attraction is Krishna. We're actually getting attached to Krishna, but we think it's the external, because we've already identified, I'm not servant of Krishna, I am the body. So therefore, everything connected with the body is mine, and I'm attached to it because I get, you know, whatever I want from it. So not seeing it, therefore, in connection with the Lord, that therefore causes all the fear and everything else. So this is actually very technical Vedanta philosophy here. It's that point of being able to see the material world as Krishna's potency, as non-different from him. Right? So that's the point of when we're talking about this aspect of he's non-different. You know, he's the original cause and the material cause, the efficient and material cause, because it's still him, it's still his potency, right? But as Krishna points out, he's different from that. So because people can't make a differentiation, therefore they have to present their philosophy very carefully in such a way as that if you get into this immanence, then it's not so much detail. They don't get into this detail of rasa. They'll just say it's his potencies and he's making everything work and stop there. Right? Because it's not too detailed. So even they get into this element of he's non-different from the creation, they don't get into as much detail as us. Because we have so much more detail of what we get into on the spiritual platform, so therefore you can deal with more here. But one has to be able to discriminate. Does that make sense? In the spiritual world, Shantaras, a spiritual mellow characterized by dispassionate temperament and neutrality of feelings, is on the lowest rung of rasa gradation. Above Shanta are Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya rasa consecutively. However, through the principle of reflection, Madhurya rasa, the topmost rasa in the spiritual world, is the bottommost on the mundane plane. Similarly, in the mundane plane, Vatsalya is above Madhurya. Then comes Sakya, Dasya, and finally on top is Shanta. Therefore, those whose conclusions are based on the nature of this material plane misconstrue the activities of the transcendental Madhurya Rasa by incorrectly considering it as equivalent to mundane Rasa, and therefore degraded and low. Right? Exchanges between the men and women of the material plane based on mundane relationships are certainly blemished and shameful, but there is no equivalent transgression of innate dharma on the transcendental platform. Because in the purest conclusion of tattva, Krishna is the only Purusha and his devotees are all Prakriti by nature. But so in other words, that principle of there, that Madhurya Rasa, the mechanics of it, because for us, it's the forms and the mechanics that we take as everything. Right? We don't actually, the rasa is not very much being tasted because, as mentioned, the material world, it's suppressed just by nature. So the main thing that's manifest in the material world is it's eternal. Right? The manifestations are temporary, but it's eternal. So it's the sat element. But chit, knowledge, one's in ignorance. Ananda, how much happiness can you get out of ignorance? You know? Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole problem is that yeah, so then we'll say the mechanics will look at it from the spiritual world. So because of that, that's why it's not viewed so much. Does it make sense?
So then according to this description, then Mayavada in the spiritual world is on the bottom, but then here it's on, everybody thinks it's on top.
On top, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's on the bottom and the material, in fact, it just doesn't quite make it through.
Yeah.
You know, now and again they poke themselves through. You know, it's like you have a fish swimming under the water.
Yeah.
You know, let's say on a bridge and so, yeah, like that. He jumps out. I was going to use a different one, but it's like you have the every now and again the fish is going along, and then suddenly, you know, some guy's face, you know, appears in the water and then disappears. You know, and then he swims more, and then another one appears and disappears. Right? You know, so you know, does that make sense? Yeah, so the point is they don't actually belong in the water. They just kind of make this little appearance. And
the bunky jumping?
Huh?
The bunky jumping?
Yeah. But another one is like that. The fish jumps out of the water. It's temporarily in the air and then back in the water. So it's not when the fish jumps out, you say, wow, the fish is, you know, on our side. Hey, you know, it's just like that. It's just a matter, you know, it's just wait another nanosecond and it's back in the water. So it's like, you know, okay, here comes the Maya body, you know. Since in the material world both the enjoyer and the enjoyed of mundane rasa are jivas, the entire business is unethical and exploitive. Right, because enjoyer and enjoyed are both jivas, so that means so. But Krishna is the Purusha, and all jivas are Prakriti. So therefore, it's in its natural position. Does that make sense? Yeah, but here it's not in its natural position. The entire business is unethical and exploitive, contradicting the nature of tattva, truth. In reality, one jiva is not the lord and enjoyer of another jiva, but all jivas, according to their eternal dharma, are rather the bhogya, enjoyed, and Krishna is the sole bhokta. Right? That's the idea. We think, I will enjoy other jivas. But the point is that's not the position. The position is Krishna is the enjoyer. We're all servants. If the jiva accepts a role antagonistic to his eternal dharma, his attitude is reprehensible. Certainly that means eternal dharma means of serving the Lord. Certainly there are many similarities between the original spiritual object and its material reflection. Therefore, parallels between mundane man-woman relationships and Krishna's transcendental pastimes with the gopis are inevitable. Right? You're going to, because the mechanics, many aspects will be similar. But as we see, is that the actual mechanics, what's going on, is within these subtleties of rasa. You know, what's the central rasa at the present? You know, what's the Sthayi Bhava? What's the central rasa at the present? What are the Anubhavas connected with that? That's the actual interaction. Right? But we tend to look at the externals and like, does that make sense? Yes.
So then, unless we take a position of a servant, then we can't even properly function in the material world.
No. That's the whole point.
Because then it's clashing the jivas all the time.
Yes. That's the whole point. That's why humility, tolerance, respecting others, not expecting any respect for yourself. Because that's a servant. If everybody does that, works very nicely. That's the whole thing, is that one has to be servant. So this idea, I'm the Lord and Master of all I survey, it doesn't work. How many guys are there? They're all there. They're all sitting there like this. And then the next moment, where are they? You know? That's the difficulty. It all comes down to that. The one problem may come up, at least in this section, you know, I hope no one will be very disturbed. It's going to make material life look extremely bleak and tasteless. You know? And whatever we think is rasa here isn't actually. You know what I'm saying? That's why this is not normally a general discussion. You throw it out now and again, but you don't focus on it too much. Because of the identity with things are here, we're too. But then what's left? What's, you know, what do you mean? No, this wasn't anything. Now it's pointing out now what you got. You know, it's like you're sitting there and you got your stack. You worked really hard. You got your stack of Monopoly money like that, you know. And then your father says, you know, hey, I'll trade all that for $10, you know. No, but I got thousands here. How can I give it up? I work so hard and everything, you know, but it's useless, you know. You can't do anything with it. No, but I have so many hotels. Have you ever stayed in one of them, you know? Like that, you know. Go in, have a rest, you know. It's like that, you know. Enjoy yourself, you know. Enjoy the foyer. Yeah, you're on Boardwalk. Come on, go for it, you know. Does that make sense? Oh, he's Boardwalk, that's American. I think in England it's something else. It's a Regent Street or something. It's another one.
We just have the town square.
The town square, yeah. Yeah. One block, yeah. Ooh, the town square. Yeah, I got three taverns on this town square here. And a vegetable shop, right? Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Vijaya, Gurudev, your wonderful analysis has strengthened my faith in this self-evident truth, dissolving the clouds of doubt. I am keen on hearing the finer and more profound details of Madhurya Rasa. Kindly explain them to me. Yeah, finer. Goswami, in Madhurya Rasa, Sri Krishna is the Vishaya. Now he's going to explain finer. That means these are finer. But if we catch the external, the mechanics of it, and say, no, but that's not fine, that's grosser. No, these are the Anubhavas. There's a certain mood of love of Krishna that affects, therefore, your supporting moods and those physical responses that go with it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Goswami, Madhurya Rasa, Sri Krishna is the Vichaya, object. His beloved gopis are the ashraya, shelter, and together they become the alambana, foundation of this rasa. So in here he's using the term object, meaning that it's focused on Krishna, right? And the others are the shelter of the rasa. So when we're talking about rasa itself, then you're getting that aspect, right? Does that make sense? But at the same time, as Rupa Goswami will talk about it, that Krishna is the subject. Supreme subject, the Radharani is the supreme object. That means within it, means if you're looking at it from general, the devotees, they have that love for Krishna, and Krishna is the object of their love. Right? It means it's directed at Krishna. But the main principle is that it's Krishna, he is the enjoyer. So that means he enjoys by how he directs his energy at the enjoyed. Right? It means interacting with what's enjoyable, what is the enjoyed, is how the enjoyer enjoys.
Yeah.
Right? If you don't interact with the food, how do you enjoy it? You understand? But it's not that the food is specifically getting something from it. Yeah, that's mundane rasa. Does that make sense? And the worst part about it is it's in the vishaya position. The food is actually in the position of the enjoyer, and you're the enjoyed. That really starts to bend the head around. Because the food can do so many things, right? You know? That makes sense? You can take the food and you know, glue pieces of paper together with it. You know, you can plaster your walls. You could take a bucket of it and dump it on somebody's head as a practical joke. You could, put it out in the backyard and the pigs will eat it. You know, you can fertilize the garden. You can, no? So, but we only choose this one particular aspect from it. So that means it has all the range of rasa, but we only have the one particular thing we're interested in. That makes us the ashray. And puts the food in the position of the vishaya. But it's dead matter, so that's the fun. We're trying to have fun by being the ashray for the dead matter. Right? But it's Krishna's potency in the dead matter that we're actually finding the interaction with. But we don't know that because we think we're the body, so therefore we're not the soul. The soul is actually the life. So in the dead matter, we think that that's the real thing, not Krishna's potency that's making it work. Mm. Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So together they became the Yalambana. These are the different aspects by which the rasa can be inspired. Right? Vijaya, would you kindly explain the qualities of Sri Krishna as the Vishaya in Madhurya Rasa? Goswami, my son, what a beautiful question. Sri Krishna is the magnanimous Purusha embellished with all good qualities. Right? Wasn't that your question before? It means in this section, you'll get your answer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It means you wanted to know about Karuna. Why is it magnanimous? He possesses the striking hue of a fresh monsoon-laden cloud. He is lovely, charming, endowed with all auspicious symptoms, strong, ever-youthful, expert, intelligent, of sweet speech, and a genius. He is also very peaceful and patient. Okay, so we go, I'll go for these ones. Okay, what we can do here. Embellished with all good qualities, just being myself, that's as good as it gets, right? You know, like that. Okay, fresh hue of the monsoon cloud, you go down and get yourself a tan sprayed on, like that, you know. He is lovely, you know, aren't I great? He is charming, everything I say is fabulous. Endowed with all auspicious symptoms, you know, check out my muscles, my tattoos, you know, like that. Strong, that's why I go to the gym. Ever youthful, you know, it costs a lot, but, you know, we're working on it, you know. Expert, you know, whatever I do is perfect, like that. Intelligent, you know, one's more intelligent than me. Of sweet speech, anything I say must be fabulous, you know, like that, you know. Hey, baby. You know, and a genius. Hey, well, that's obvious, right, you know. Right, so kind of like that, we don't mind that part. But here, on this side, he is also very peaceful and patient. What's that got to do with being a man, right? You know? Witty. Okay, you know, that's nice, you know. Astute. Ooh, you have to be aware, right? Self-satisfied. Hey, you know, that what's the meaning of being a man if you don't, you know. Grateful. Are you kidding? Like that. And generous. Well, you know, whenever I can get something back out of it. You understand? So this is the problem in the mundane, is certain things we take, it's just the form of it, and certain aspects. But the actual qualities required to operate it, that's not there. Does that make sense? So this is where the problem comes up. So that's the point, is it's based on the qualities. These are manifestations of the qualities. He is captivated by the love of his devotees, right? It's not something he's expecting. He's captivated by it. Doesn't mean it's, you know, of course, I did this. How come they didn't respond? I gave them opportunity. They didn't. you know, to respond the way I expected that they should. No, he's captivated by the love because it's very natural. He's dealing correctly, then it comes. He is grave, right? So that means he's thoughtful. So you can't always understand what he's thinking about. It means it's so, you know, deep. The most accomplished in everything, right? So that starts to go a little out of most people's way. Because right? This jack of all trades, master of none. Here he's, you know, how you say, Krishna of all trades and master of everything. And illustrious, right? So that means it's all good qualities, good everything like that. The enchanter of the gopis, right? Means he actually enchants them. Not that just they allow him to do his tricks so that he thinks he's, you know, doing good, well. He is always original and unique. Now that's the thing, you know, someone has to, you know, he's got his plans and that, and then, you know, he goes on with them, and then at 50 he reinvents himself, right? So, you know, Krishna at every moment is original and unique, because he's ever expanding. That means at every moment there's something new and fresh about him. Right? A performer of extraordinary deeds. His exquisite beauty is unmatched. Right, because also you have to do is perform extraordinary deeds. There's also you have to balance. I mean, one aspect because of the what we're talking about here, because is that it is in all realms. But the point is this is in connection with the gopis, right? Extraordinary deeds. There is the saying that the same effort and skill required to manage a kingdom is required to see that the conjugal rasa goes nicely. So that's extraordinary deeds. Does that make sense? Because the point is, as we mentioned, so you're going to see, because when you think of extraordinary deeds, we think of kings, right? Greatly, you know, like that. But in the same category of, you know, is women, children, you know, those proud of their money and crazy people. Right? What's the common thing? They all want the impossible. Right? So getting the impossible done, that's extraordinary. Right? So, think about it. You know, we're thinking, wow, he's hanging out with so many girls, that must be fun. No, that means that's 16,108 extraordinary deeds of managing the impossible.
Well done.
Yeah, so it kind of takes that. It's yeah. So that's right. His beauty is unmatched. He is the transcendental ocean of sublime pastimes. Right? Because he's the origin of his energy. So that means his beauty is the most beautiful. Right? And because the feminine is connected to the masculine, that's naturally it's going to be attractive. But the devotee is more attractive than Krishna because they're attached to him. Right? So Krishna is just naturally beautiful. But, as Prabhupada mentioned, not as beautiful as when the gopis are manifest. When Radharani expands, then that's... So if it says exquisite beauty, that means the internal potency is there. If it just says beauty, that's just Krishna. But exquisite beauty, that means the internal potency has to be there. Otherwise, he's beautiful, but he's not that, like that. It's not exquisite.
It's like you have the rose, and then you have the leaves, you know, the ma and the woman. The rose is like the ma, and then the leaves, that's the woman and the whole thing together, and it's exquisitely beautiful.
Yeah, you kind of, but I would use a different example. No, the stems have got thorns on it. But it means if you want to be successful, it's got to be the roses, the feminine, and the leaves are the masculine. No, I'm just saying. It just depends upon how you're applying it. Does that make sense? The point is that the thing has a situation. So if you're taking the situation, meaning the Lord in his internal potency, then you're taking that tattva aspect, That would be like the rose and then the leaves and everything. Does that make sense? Because then, because Krishna is the epitome, the center of everything, and everything else is the support. But when we put it into this conjugal element, then you tend to reverse it, because then at least, you know, it means in tattva it's correct, but in rasa it has to be the other way. Does that make sense? He is the transcendental ocean of sublime pastimes, which inundates the heart of young maidens with ultimate good fortune. Right? There's your magnanimity. Right? Vijaya, Krishna, the repository of all transcendental divine qualities and splendor, is the sole hero of this mysterious Madhurya Rasa. A sole hero. There's no one else is going to, you know, okay, me and Krishna, you know. No, it's just going to be Krishna, right? Now my heart is effervescent with bhava. Now, what is here is that, now one would say, no, but in the spiritual world, people are married. But in the spiritual world, how do they conduct their married life? Is it spontaneous?
No.
What's it according to?
Sure.
The rules, right? In other words, the rules that apply to grihasthas here are the rules that are there. Why is that? Because this is the reflection of that. Because that's not their position. Right? So therefore, they're following the rules of it, because then it has its position in relationship to Krishna. Does that make sense? So Krishna is the sole hero of Madhurya Rasa. Everybody else is just working in a position of assisting in that for Krishna's service. Does that make sense? Okay. Now my heart is effervescent with bhava, and I am constantly experiencing the presence of Krishna. Now, even if I wanted to leave Krishna, he would not forsake my heart. Yeah, and also 1/10,000 the tip of that means it's poetic. It's what, how far can 1/10,000 the tip of the hair get? So it means you can't get away. It's just that feeling of leaving, but you can't, because Krishna's there, and Krishna, you see, he doesn't go away. You know what I'm saying? We're thinking, oh, Krishna, where is Krishna? He's in your heart. He's there. We're the ones that says he's not there. He's there. True rasa is not available upon the material plane. It is of the spiritual world. Right? So here, that's why one follows the rules that are given in the social thing, because then rasa will function. Right? Because otherwise, it doesn't work by you trying to be the center. You know, or even if you externally try to make the other person the center, it works a little better. Does that make sense? But it's not until the other person is the center. Right? Then in Madhurya Rasa, that other person has to be Krishna.
As a devotees, we think that we belong to Krishna. But then gopis, they sing that he belongs to them.
Yes. When you get to that platform, then you can
call me.
Call Krishna. You know what I'm saying? See, because it's like this, is that until one is purified, then if Krishna is yours, then what? Then you do with him as you please, rather than you do what pleases him.
Yeah.
You understand? But in that position, they only do what pleases Krishna. So Krishna's theirs, so that means the intimacy is so much greater that therefore they have more of that opportunity of interacting, right? If I belong to Krishna, then it's whenever the opportunity is there. If Krishna's mine, then it's the opportunity is greater.
Yeah.
Right? But from that is there, but as long as the attachment is there, one has to be very, very careful about performing one's duties from that platform. Otherwise, one may take Krishna too lightly. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. You know, so therefore there's that element that, you know, we're servant of Krishna. But we're saying, I'm Krishna's, meaning I'm servant of Krishna. We're not taking that mood of right wing or left wing. we're basically just trying to appreciate that we've situated ourselves on the spiritual platform as I'm the soul and serving the Krishna rather than I'm not serving the Krishna, I'm the body. Does that make sense? So it's slightly different. You're using same kind of words, you know, but you're actually dealing there in tattva. Because in rasa, that naturally just works on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. As the jiva is chit kana, a spark of spiritual energy, rasa manifests within his consciousness. Rasa appears only in deep bhakti samadhi, devotional meditation. Those who have received the grace of Sri Gurudev and have realized the distinction between Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness, and Mishra Sattva, mixed goodness, are free from all doubts. Right? So if you can tell the difference. So the Shuddha Sattva, now here he's talking Shuddha Sattva and Mishra Sattva. Mixed goodness means mixed goodness is what in the material world we call goodness. Because it's always mixed, so you just call it goodness. You don't say mixed goodness, mixed passion, mixed ignorance, because they're always mixed. You just say goodness, passion, ignorance. Right? So one who can tell the difference between pure goodness and the material goodness, right? Then you can start to appreciate this. But then the point is notice here it says pure goodness. That means you can start to appreciate, because you can see what is supposed to be here according to the rules. Right? In other words, from the mode of passion, ignorance would be much harder. Does that make sense? Okay. So also we see here is that we're talking about that these feelings are coming from the soul. Right? Now let us say one goes into a fearful situation. Okay? Then, so you know, at that point, then the fear becomes the central rasa, right? Everything else becomes the sanchari, right? So now, what are the anubhavas, or the sancharis of this fear? What are the physical...
Can't move,
okay, you become stunned, because it's very extreme. Other things?
Trembling.
Perspiration.
Palpitation
of the heart.
Become pale,
okay. Huh? Yeah, I was waiting for that one. Okay, thank you. Yeah, so you understand all these different things, and these are all mentioned as all the sanctuaries. Why wouldn't they be? It's not going to be there's some different set here. It's the same set. Right? So now, but what causes that? Did it come from the soul, that hair stand, all the things that, where did it come from?
From the body.
From the body, but specifically what in the body? The life airs, but then also then what is, means that's what's pushing, but what chemically does this?
Adrenaline.
You understand? But in the spiritual world, they don't have adrenaline.
Yeah.
It's actually coming from the soul. That's why they say that's rasa. And here it's not. Because the adrenaline is there, all these other different chemicals are there that create all these different things. Right? Because if you ask the medical, why does this happen? Oh, because of this one with that one and this chromosome and that one and all this and that. So therefore, then the guy scratches his head when the mosquito bites him. Right? right?
Yeah. Nice explanation.
Yes. So that's all that's going on. But no, but this is all chemicals going on because the thing is it's not real. We have that desire, but we're not the body. Right? We think we're the body, so where are you going to experience all these emotions? It'll have to be through the body, because you say you're the body. But the body's dead matter, so you put some chemicals on it, it does something. You take this rock, put some chemicals on it, it goes pale. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that, because then it goes, oh, I'm going pale. No, the rock's going pale. Does that make sense? That's why I said that there isn't real rasa here, because otherwise you say, no, but we have feelings, we have this and that. Yeah, but what are they generated by? They're not generated by the soul. They're generated by the particular chemicals of the body, the reactions of the body. You know, the chemicals, the life airs, the nerves, all these different things. You know, the earth, water, fire, air, and ether combining together in various combinations is what causes the reactions in the body. Yes.
So when we experience emotional symptoms, which also express through the body, it's coming from the soul. That's the difference.
Yes, if it's connected to Krishna, then you're actually then it's coming from the soul. But if it's not connected to Krishna, it's just the body doing it. We have attachment and desire for that, so according to our karma, that happens. What we can see is that rasa and connection with Krishna is not based on karma. It has nothing to do with karma. It's the actual interaction of the soul. You know what I'm saying? But according to what we saw before, if it's below bhava, then they're dry symptoms. You know, if it's at that stage there where it's mixed and that, you know, then it's moist. And then when it's actually fully manifest in prema, or it's in its, you know, clear state, then it's wet. You know, so you get all these different things. It's that they're light, they're slight, they're real. That's why we're saying rati is the actual active principle in the whole thing. Rati is what's acting. Rati is what is creating the movement through sadhana bhakti. Rati is what's causing all the rasa to be appreciated. So it's that attraction to Krishna, that attachment to Krishna, that's what's causing it. So that's what it's all about, becoming attracted and attached to Krishna. That's rati. So you say, okay, I've heard that, yeah, but no, the point is that's the topmost aspect. You're not appreciating the depth of this, the significance of it. Does that make sense?
So my doubt was that we experience material emotions.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, fear and adrenaline. And also by appreciation of Krishna, you can feel that your hair is standing. Which
yes.
Is similar.
It means the mechanics, it'll be done through the same thing, but the one's coming from the soul and the other's being arranged. It means it's all being arranged by the modes of nature. But one is it's according to your karma and the other is according to your devotion. You know what I'm saying? Because you're still, it's going to matter. It means you don't have a spiritual body, so therefore Mahamaya has to work through the gross body. You have a spiritual body, Yogamaya works through that. Does that make sense? Yes. Yeah? Something or?
I'm just thinking about the love the guru. Is that a material emotion?
That depends how it's applied. Like that. But in principle, according to the philosophy, no, that's coming from the heart. That's coming from the soul. But the elements of I love my guru so much the whole rest of the world should get an opportunity to understand the bliss I'm feeling, that's mundane. Like that. Okay. You had something? No?
So in order to understand rasa, we need to understand tattva?
Yes, that's why we start with philosophy. Because if you don't understand the philosophy, how you'll understand the rasa. That's why the sahajiyas jump straight. Yeah. At least I didn't say some great, right? You know, like that, or whatever it is. You know. They go straight to the rasa and think that no, you don't need all the tattva, but because you don't, therefore it will be interpreted as mundane. You know, as we'll see, we'll get into that.
Putting chili supplements.
Yes, you know, during the festival time, then we'll get into the apasampada. Is this an answer? Okay, so end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta. Aktivindiki, Jainatai Gaur, Pranayam.